Education has long been seen as the road to opportunity, but a new study suggests that investments in education have a much bigger impact on the world economy than we ever imagined.
We knew that education is very useful, but we didn't really know by how much, and in particular, by how much it has been useful in the past decades since the 1980s. So my first contribution is to quantify that. I'm Amory Gethin. I'm an economist in the World Bank Development Research Group. I work on topics related to economic growth, inequality, and the evaluation of public policies.
Amory Gethin's worldwide database shows that investing in education not only advances those who pursue degrees, but it also ends up benefiting those who don't.
If some of them move to the city and get a better job, thanks to education, both those who move to the city and also those who stay benefit in terms of increased productivity and higher wages.
Gethin's article outlining his study appears in the March edition of Finance and Development magazine. Journalist Rhoda Metcalf met up with him to discuss his research.
We've known for a long time that education helps pull people out of poverty. So in terms of numbers, I mean, what are we talking about? How big does your study suggest these effects have been?
Yes, so in my research, I find that education explains a really large fraction of worldwide growth and poverty reduction, about two-thirds of growth for the extreme poor since 1980.
Wow, that's a lot.
And second, we often think that education increases economic growth in different countries, but we didn't really have a sense of how these effects vary for different people within each country. And so my research shows that education disproportionately benefits low-income earners. So as a result, it's particularly efficient for reducing global poverty, since global poverty is also a lot about lifting poor people out of poverty within each country and not only, you know, poor versus rich countries.
But your research, as I understand it, also found that education has had a larger impact on overall economic growth than we had previously thought, right?
Yes, it's very well known that education has a positive effect on growth. There's been debate, however, on how big that effect is. Economists have debated a lot on whether it's somewhere around 10 to 20% of growth that can be accounted for. So in my paper, I bring in first a new database that allows me to better measure the returns to schooling in different countries. And I also account for something that has been overlooked in these studies of education and growth, which is that the benefits of education depend on the economic environment in which you are. And when you have an economy that is already growing, then the benefits of education appear to be much greater than what a sort of static, naive analysis would suggest. And so when I account for that, I find that education can account for about half of worldwide growth since 1980.
Wow, that's interesting.
But when I say that education explains so much of growth, I'm talking about education not all alone, but I'm, you know, evaluating the effect that education had given other transformations that happened in the world economy during that period. So what's key, education has had large effects precisely because there's been improvements in technology, productivity growth, through other things that have made education a particularly valuable investment.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about this connection between education and technology. You say that the two really play together. How does that work?
So in my research, I show that there are two key channels through which technology can make education more valuable. The first one is what is sort of the usual suspect among economists, which is skill-biased technical change, meaning that in different countries, there's rising labor demand for skilled labor. So new technologies, they disproportionately benefit skilled workers. So given the evolution of these technologies, education becomes particularly powerful in comparison to a world in which technology would not have changed.
Basically, are you saying that technology offers more opportunities to people who have an education? Is that a piece of it?
Yes, it's a piece of it. If nothing changes in the world and you just expand education, this is not going to have very large effects because there are going to be many, many skilled workers. They are going to compete for the same jobs. And so their wage, their relative wage will go down. And so this is what, you know, economists refer to as decreasing returns to human capital. However, in an economy where there's rising demand for skilled workers, the story is completely different. And then education becomes much more powerful. And in fact, not expanding education in this economy is really detrimental for growth, and especially detrimental to the very poor, because there's decreasing labor demand for unskilled workers. So they really lose if we don't expand education in this changing world that we've been in.
Right.
And the second key channel is that technology also increases growth. And so the overall benefit that you get from education is greater because the economy is growing.
Okay. And you also mentioned in your paper that even people who are not getting educated can benefit economically if a lot of other people get an education. Can you explain that?
Yes, that's actually a central component of my research that's often overlooked when we think about education policy. The idea here is that when you expand the share of people with more education in the economy, this is going to indirectly benefit those without education. And the mechanism is fairly simple. If you have a lot of people competing for low-skilled jobs, then their relative wage is going to be quite low because of this, you know, labor supply among unskilled workers. Meanwhile, if you take a number of these workers and you increase their education, then fewer people are going to end up competing for these low-skilled jobs. So this is the classic labor supply and demand framework in economics that shows us that in the end, when you increase education, there are large positive spillovers to unskilled workers because of these competitive effects.
And I guess you could see the same thing happening in agricultural settings, right? Where, you know, you're talking about low-income farmers.
Yes, exactly. That's another way to illustrate it. In the case of land, yes, it's quite clear that if you have a large number of people working on a plot of a limited size, each worker's average productivity is probably going to be lower than if some of them move to the city and get a better job. Thanks to education,
right.
In which case both those who move to the city and also those who stay benefit in terms of increased productivity and higher wages.
So, I mean, there's obviously a lot of different ways to invest in education. Based on your research, what do you see as the most economically effective, you know, say between investing in higher education versus more universal basic education?
When you look at the returns per year of education, the returns are higher at higher levels of education. So on average, the return to primary education is about, you know, 5% per year typically, while the return to college per year of college is more around 15%. So much higher returns to higher levels of education. But that being said, it's a complicated question because college is also more expensive than basic education. So these are complex questions that need to be looked at, you know, case by case, depending on the costs and the benefits.
Can you give me an example of this comparative spending around education? I think in your paper, you refer to India versus China.
Yes, so it's useful to understand that different countries have expanded different levels of education, and this has different effects on growth and inequality. Indeed, India is at a lower level of education to start with than China. So since the 80s and 90s, they've invested more in basic education. Meanwhile, China was already much more educated. So much of the expansion in education in China has been at the secondary and tertiary level. And because these are levels that have typically higher returns, it's likely that overall the benefits in China have been slightly higher. But again, we should be careful because this depends on how much each of these costs. But in any case, in both of these countries, there have been very large positive spillovers to unskilled workers. So there's very clear evidence that education has also reduced inequality and disproportionately benefited the very poor in these countries.
Yeah, interesting. I'm interested to know how you got this more nuanced picture of education's economic impact. You know, how is your data different from the data that's been used in the past to look at this question?
So in the past, researchers have mostly been interested in two separate things. The first one is the aggregate effect of education on macroeconomic growth.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, labor economists have been very interested in studying the relationship between technology and education. We've been talking a lot about that and how education shapes inequality within countries. Mm-hmm. I think my main contribution in my research is to put these two perspectives together. So here, what I did is to put together a new database that allows me to observe education and inequality, education and incomes at the individual level for almost all countries in the world.
Okay.
And this allowed me to both estimate the effect that education had on growth, but also, and crucially, how this growth has been distributed. And here, you know, really the key takeaway is that education disproportionately benefits low-income earners in all countries. And as a result, if you were just to say, well, education increases growth in poor countries, what does that tell us about poverty? You would be missing a huge part of the picture, because actually the majority of the global poor live in middle-income countries. So once you start accounting for that, accounting for these distributional effects, you find that education actually has had a much greater impact on worldwide poverty than an analysis focused on aggregate country-level data would suggest. So looking at what happens within countries is absolutely key to understanding global poverty trends in the past decades.
So where did you draw this new data from?
So the main data source I use for this project is the International Labour Organization's Harmonized Labour Force Survey database. So most countries in the world, they field labour force surveys where they ask people about whether they're employed, what's their income, whether they're wage earners or self-employed individuals, as well as education, of course. And so I've put together all these labor force surveys thanks to the ILO that kindly gave me access to their micro database. And I also complemented their database with a number of other sources. So it was quite a long and tiring process, but putting all of this together, I was able to construct what I think is the first database allowing us to observe the world distribution of income at the individual level. So I have surveys for 154 countries covering about 97% of the world's population.
Wow.
And so it's thanks to this new database that I was able to develop this exercise and quantify how much of worldwide poverty reduction can be accounted for by schooling.
It's great. It's really interesting. So finally, based on your research, if you were the education minister of a country and you could choose where to spend the education budget, where would you put the money?
So first of all, I would put more money. I think that countries are definitely not investing too much in education. Almost every single study I've read shows that there's that additional money spent in education is almost always beneficial for growth. And second, when it comes to where, I think I would try to balance it depending on what are the returns to different levels of education, what's the cost. But I think we do need to spend a bit more on higher levels of education to avoid that only a very small fraction of people benefit from these huge technological improvements that we've seen around the world. So for innovation, for growth, and also for inequality, we should invest not only at basic levels of education, which is key, but also at higher levels, including in low and middle income countries.
No, oh, it's a really fascinating piece of research you've done. And I, you know, congratulations to you for having brought so many interesting insights out of this massive amounts of data. Amory Gethin, I really appreciate talking to you today. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a great pleasure.
Amory Gethin is an economist in the World Bank Development Research Group. He was speaking with Rhoda Metcalf. Look for his article on the power of education policy in the March issue of Finance and Development magazine at imf.org/FND. I'm Bruce Edwards.
And I'm Rhoda Metcalf. Thanks for listening.